Aussie music is something to be proud of.
Wear it like a badge.
Because it's Australian bands and artists that are the influences of so many other musicians the world over. So at Triple M,
we're proud to be able to showcase the power of the Aussie music scene.
Paying both homage to the greats that have stood the test of time, right alongside the current, the emerging, the future influences.
The ones that will be next to make their mark on the global music scene.
If it's Aussie and it rocks, it's right here. This is Triple M Aussie with Matty O.
So excited for this one around the country on the Triple M Network. Co-hosting with me tonight for the full hour, one of our great frontmen, unique and innovator. Whether it's acting, writing, stage shows, he's done it all. But we know him best from a band that we love and celebrate. Just released their 11th studio album. Of course, I'm talking about Tim Rogers from You're My... We'll talk about the origins of the band, the early days in Sydney, jumping on supports with the Hoodoo Gurus. Becoming one of the biggest bands in the country, sharing the stage with Nirvana, The Who, The Rolling Stones. Number one albums, winning 6 arias in one night, touring Europe. We'll also open up and touch on mental health in the music industry, go in depth on his songwriting process. Looking at him now through the window, that big, beautiful smile, the sharpest dressed man in rock. Lots of fun tonight. Tim Rogers in the studio. Next is You Are My Cackles Clown. Woo! You are my Triple M Aussie, nothing but homegrown rock. Joining me in the studio, co-hosting tonight, is Tim Rogers. Welcome to the show. Just quickly, the first time I met you about 15 years ago, I went up to you and said, I'm a fan. You said, oh, what do you do? I said, I play in a band called British India. We're just starting out. You looked at me and said, of course you do. You're going to be a star.
Matthew, I cannot believe I said that. But it's true. You've got those cheekbones, you know, those looks. You know, I think I was right.
Hey, man, this album is finally out. You must be excited.
It's quite something. As I've said for years, if you think it's fun being in a rock band when you're 21, when you're 51, it's flipping hilarious. Matty, you wait, man. It's really the do it to make records and put them out and genuinely exciting. And I like being an older gentleman who's girlishly enthusiastic about doing things like putting out records.
And especially after the year we've had, you know, not being able to tour, like, you know, being away is such a big part of your life. Like, what's it like to have new music out now and being able to go and play shows?
Well, you can sense that people are enjoying being out amongst other people. You can also sense a certain nervousness, which is understandable.
Mm.
Gratefulness is a term that we talk a lot about. I hope that other people are talking about. They're very grateful for the opportunity that we've got to do it compared to the rest of the world. Not to be smug about it. I think not meaning to come across like a bit of a naysayer or a skeptic at all, but just I think most people have run into a grateful, but gratefulness comes with awareness about
yeah.
how lucky we are. And but then, you know, when you get a six-pack Danny Gullet and strap a guitar on, I bugger gratefulness. Let's party. Let's have fun.
What's it been like? You've been able to play some shows, play these new songs live, and it's incredible with the recording of this because for the first time you guys weren't in the same state putting it down.
There's been recordings where we haven't been in the same state. the running little rigmarole was it was irregular to record apart from each other. But, I mean, you know us. Well, we've played together that we yeah. like to really enjoy it, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we know that you do as well. And so when you get into a studio, yeah, you want to make a good record, but you don't ponder over it. You yeah. want to have fun and get loose. And so when the four of us get into a room, first day of recording, we have a bit of a get on, a bit of a party. And yeah. then so days two, three, and four are rubbish. And because we were away from each other, there was none of that.
Yeah.
You know, Davey and I got together in Melbourne, Russ and Andy up in Sydney, and then yeah. Russ over in Perth. And it was oddly professional.
Did lockdown change the way you were writing? Not lyrically, but as far as maybe coming up with ideas, you were doing things differently because you had more time to be at home?
I think it did. Only in that I started, because I kind of was trying to leave the band before the plague happened.
Yeah, right.
I was pretty depressed, I think. I thought, I don't want to bring my friends down. We were touring and I knew I was in a bit of trouble. And so at the end of a tour that we did a couple of years ago, I just went and got a couple of jobs and thought, well, that's it for me. And I was getting ready to tell the band, I want to stay your friends, but I don't know if I want to be in the band anymore. I don't know if I want to play music anymore. I'd just rather just work and write songs for my own amusement rather than for the band. And anyway, then we couldn't play. And about 6 months after that started happening, maybe I was just listening to the right records or, you know, I lost my day jobs as well because I work in hospitality and I just got a taste for it again and also thought that I'm not bad at it. Mm. And so getting together and sending these songs to the guys and really enjoying editing lyrics and
yeah.
work crafting songs rather than just putting out the first idea. Often your first idea is your worst idea. I'd always thought that editing yourself either lyrically or musically was very un-rock and roll, but to get a good song, a little editing is not such a bad thing. Maybe the plague taught me that.
When you write songs, when you're writing these songs, did they feel like you were my songs?
Not initially, because I wrote them, every single one of mine, because Davey's got a few on the record. Every one of mine started out as a folk song because I was doing an orchestrated record with a fella. So I was going to be just with an orchestra and very lyric-based. I took all of the songs that I wrote for that and turned them into You Are My Songs because I wanted to be in the band. Yeah, so they went through five or six different incarnations. You know, if you're in a band, you write for the band, you know, and often a writer will try and dictate the way that they can hear it in their head.
Mm.
But if you're in a room with other humans and they're playing instruments, I think if you're the writer and if you bring that, you've got to step back and just think, well, what does this person, I mean, you know, you're in a band with intelligent musicians and also enthusiastic musicians, so you know what it's like. I'm in a band with Rusty and Davey and Andy, and I'm the least musically literate of the four. And so I'll present a song to Russ, and he'll come up with something completely different from what I thought. On every single song on the record, I could have said to Russ, why don't you play it this way? I could have said that, but an idiot to say that. Because he's the smartest guy in the room, you know.
Tim Rogers, co-hosting Triple M Aussie. Up next, man, I want to ask you about meeting Josh Homme for the first time and supporting Nirvana in Australia. From their 11th studio album, The Lies of Others, new rock, the You and My, The Water Boy, Triple M Aussie. There's a Scottish man, he's fronting an American band. Now he lives in Dublin, though. I'm in Rosedale looking for ghosts. You're on Triple M Aussie. Love a new rock from You and I, the Waterboy, from their brand new album, The Lives of Others, out now. Co-hosting with me tonight is the one and only Tim Rogers for the full show. This album, man, how many tracks did you have written for it? Was there a deadline for the end of recording?
You know, Davey and my deadline was last May. we were ready to just do it and to get it out there.
Yeah.
You know, let's record it on a Tascam 08. What were those, you know, little four tracks? And get it. Andy, who's our bass player and manager, just said, come on, dudes, chill. And just to hold back. He asked us to hold back. So we had about 30 songs.
Wow.
Yeah, cool. And some crackers. And as usual, the ones that I initially thought would be crackers aren't.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the way it always goes, man.
You know, I'm Tim Rogers, goddammit. But I don't always have the best ideas.
Well, I was going to say, man, this is so interesting. What's it like playing these songs live, considering you haven't played them really as a band before? Are you hearing things in the songs that you might not have been aware of when you were recording them?
That's a really good question. Well, because we weren't in the same room, I guess I hear... every part different. I hear what Davey's doing and Andy's doing and Russ is doing. There's a couple get very emotional about, because as much as try and downplay it, and we're very lucky in this country, and like last year and had family members die of the plague, and you know, my daughter in New York got it, and her experiencing that, and it's all, some of these songs when playing them get very emotional about that. Because last year was kind of awful on a personal level. Playing these songs of joy, it's quite a confluence of emotions. And
yeah,
so it's sort of, you know, crying and laughing and all at the same time. Yeah, quite overwhelming.
When we've had this year off, you know, being musicians, used to touring, I've spoken to a lot of people, it's been like a time of reflection when they think of parts of their career and like, did that actually happen? like looking back over your career, like, you've done some incredible things. Like, you've recorded albums in New York, Minnesota, you've played all these huge festivals. Do you have times where things come back, you're like, man, we supported the Stones and the Who, like little things like that?
Yeah. I could play the cool card, but no, I'm not cool. Yeah, absolutely. The most prescient ones are tours we did with, or shows that we did with bands that maybe aren't as well known.
Yeah.
Because you could really hang out. Well, this band, San Diego band called Rocket from the Crypt, who we adore,
yeah,
and they offered us a tour through Europe in about 1998. Walking through the streets of Paris with those guys, touring with the Screaming Trees, meeting Josh Homme for the first time when he was a kid. I mean, I guess he was just out of Caius then,
yeah,
playing second guitar with the Screaming Trees. And I was so in love with Lanigan that, you know, I just was kind of slavishly hanging around his boot tails. But then I remember Josh, and then what happened with him and the Queens, and, well, that's been really, that whenever I see that band or hear them, I think about knowing him as a much younger man, and he was so sweet and lovely. So, yeah, there's, you know, I try, my daughter's friends asked me a couple of years ago, hey, Mr. Rogers, did you play with Nirvana?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, we did. Selena's 1992 or something like that.
Whoa.
I mean, I remember bits of it.
Yeah.
I remember going to a party with Grohl and Chris.
Yeah.
Then the show, and they were amazing.
Yeah.
It was so exciting because it was at Selena's, and I guess Selena's held about 1,400. And they came on, God, I can't remember the first song. I was so excited. And we shared a dressing room with them.
Right.
And the thing back to that, well, I guess to a lot of folks who adore that band, that just sounds ridiculous. But it was just, you know, I was upstairs at Selena's and that's what we did. And, you know, our first tour with the Beast of Bourbon, as we were talking about before, like, such an education. I didn't realise that, you know, people could actually live like that and live.
Tim Rogers from You and I co-hosting tonight. Up next, man, I want to ask you about the early days, playing gigs in Sydney, coming up in that Australian music scene in the 90s. So many talented bands. Here's Nirvana live, back to Selena's, Triple M Aussie.
Bring your friends down to lose.
Yeah, Nirvana Life, Triple M Aussie, hanging out. Tim Rogers co-hosting with me tonight. Man, I want to talk about the early days coming up in Sydney, having a look at a few of the venues you were playing.
Feathers
at Crow's Nest.
I think that's the first time we played with the Hard-Ons.
The Lansdowne, the Hopetown. Like
we used to live behind the Lansdowne.
Right.
To get anywhere on the bill at the Lansdowne was a really big deal. The 80s in Sydney, when you used to go and see things, it's all about the Hard-Ons, Mass Appeal, Hellmen, anything that Tex was involved in, would go and see. So around the time that we started out, three or four-piece guitar bands were getting a chance again without any theatrics. Or any particular panache. We're very lucky that way because we didn't have a lot of panache, but we had a lot of enthusiasm. We had a really good looking bass player, Fischler, my best mate, who started the band. And so we got a lot of shows through his charm.
And you were playing like 6-7 nights a week. Must have been a pretty fun scene to be a part of.
Yeah, it was. And when the big sort of bangs for our contemporaries, when Tumbleweed put out, I think, the Stone single, and then when they put out Carousel, Tumbleweed were what was happening to them. I guess that was about 1991. That was the big bang for us. And Rat Cat before that, I mean, Rat Cat getting huge. And because they were not friends of ours, but acquaintances. And we got to tour with them a little bit and see all that happen. That Rat Cat thing was flipping serious.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And they were good people and remain really, really good people. And then Tumbleweed blew up and were selling out 500 people rooms and 600. Yeah. And they took us on tour. Yeah, you played 5 or 6 nights a week.
Yeah.
And kind of get through.
What was that first tour like with Hoodoo Gurus? I think you jumped on Hoodoo Gurus as a support.
They gave us our first break, absolutely. And they were complete heroes of ours. I was a front row Hoodoo Gurus fan ever since I was, first heard of them. Brad Shepherd became my mate. And we used to hang out a lot together. And there is a way of touring with people who are your heroes, and they treated us very kindly. Full Rider would never.
Yeah, that's generous.
That is generous.
That is. You know. For the support band of Full Rider, that's a good time.
That's the golden handshake.
Yeah.
They were good people. And those tours were kind of relentless, 50, 60 shows in 2 months, whatever.
Wow.
They were very professional by that stage, I guess. Professional, I mean that with the utmost respect, that they, every night, delivered full capacity, 110%. I think we figured out that we would never be that band. We couldn't do that. We're a little looser and a bit sillier, and I didn't have a strong voice. And so we kind of figured out the way we could be by the end of those tours, that we couldn't be as rock solid, full performance every night.
Yeah.
But we could be the bratty cousins of the Hoodoo Gurus,
Yeah, man.
Or the Beasts or whoever it was. So.
Hanging out with Tim Rogers from UMI co-hosting tonight. Up next, man, want to hear about those early Big Day Out tours, Iggy Pop, and then you met Lee Rinaldo from Sonic Youth, recorded in the States. It's after Hoodoo Gurus now. Triple M Aussies.
Oh, the nights are long and I'm so tired of waking up tired. Man, they just drag on and I'm so tired of waking up tired. The company I'm keeping won't let me get my sleep in. Oh, I hate the light and I'm so tired of waking up tired. The morning sun is getting way too bright and I'm so tired of waking up tired. If I was worth a fortune, I'd never leave my bedroom. I just wanna stay.
Yeah, Hoodoo Gurus, Triple M Aussie, hanging out with Tim Rogers tonight, co-hosting. Up next, going to hear about winning 6 ARIA Awards in one night touring Europe. But you guys played one of the first big day outs, 93, with Iggy Pop, Sonic Youth, Mudhoney, Be Suburban, Nick Cave. What was that like?
Yeah, it was exciting getting to see those bands and hang out. I mean, the parties afterwards, stuff of legend. You're suddenly snorting lines next to this person or that person, you know, I love you and I've loved your music, and then you're doing drugs with them.
Mm.
Which I guess the big thing from that was everyone's just looking for a good time, a quiet time. You sort of figure it doesn't matter what level success you're at. Off stage, you can't please a lot of people at the same time. And one-on-one is really important. Whether it's, you know, Cornell or Vedder or Perry Farrell or Courtney Love or people who are not friends of mine at all, but they're one-on-one. You realise everyone just wants to hunker down, just have a one-on-one talk if people are interesting. And then they want to turn the room on and hold the room, and that's their domain. That's great. You know, oddly enough, you know, the Gallagher brothers, anyone in that band, when they don't want to take over a room, they want one-on-one time to be a good touring companion or a tour manager or a support band or whatever it is, or a crew person. You've got to pick up on that and sort of acquiesce to what your friends want and what your bandmates want and what your crew want.
Is that when you kind of met up with Lee Ranaldo from Sonic Youth?
Yeah, there was a bit of a record company stitch up initially, because I don't think Lee was particularly interested in this musically.
Mm.
He was offered the chance to produce us and he said yeah, because I think it was a job. And
gotcha.
He got a paycheck thrown at him. And he said, yeah, sure, I'll work with these bohunks. And then when we met up, I think that he liked that we loved Aerosmith and also, but didn't sound like Aerosmith or that we were nerds, you know.
Yeah.
And so he took us to America and made us better people. I think he made us a better band, but he definitely made us better people because he's a viciously intelligent guy.
Yeah.
Lee plays in Sonic Youth, but he's also a visual artist, he's a collagist, and he's a poet and a really excellent prose writer and a travel writer. He was just someone that we could look at and think, well, you don't need to be a dick to progress as a human, as a musician, I beg your pardon. Try and fill your beautiful mind with beautiful, beautiful information. And he really showed us that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible when you meet people in music that not only make you better musicians, but you feel like they make you better people too. You really take something from an experience like that?
Well, there's definitely people we tour with who let us know that's not who we want to be like. I mean, we did a lot of touring in the States and Europe with people who were terrible, very competitive, tried to cut us down at every opportunity. And as you say, Matty, I guess you learned from that as well, that's not how you want to be. And I think at times during our times as well, I haven't always acted very nicely to people. You learn from your mistakes, I guess, and running into crew people, now that particularly that crew people are back working, to share those experiences, say, you know, hey, I wasn't all that great back then, you know, I was on the pipe they'll say, hey, sorry, I fucked up on that tour, I was a bit messed up. And I guess maybe for all the horribleness of last year, maybe get together now and just, you know, say, sorry, let's get on with it.
Yeah, man. Well said. Hanging out with Tim Rogers, UMI up next, going to talk about Hourly Daily, your third album. You're the biggest band in the country. 6 arias for all the Mighty Sheargold Show fans. Good morning, Triple M Aussie. You're my Triple M Aussie, nothing but homegrown rock. Co-hosting with me tonight, the one and only Tim Rogers. Let's go back to your third record, Hourly Daily. Goes to number one. Cleaning up at the Arias. You got six of them.
I wouldn't mind another one.
Yeah. What was that like? You know, you're the biggest band in the country at that time.
It was silly. We were on tour for 40 shows before that Aria Awards. And then on the night of the Aria Awards, we won all those. The record company we were on sold us Ruart, who we were with, and they released Ali Daly, and it was distributed through Shock for a while, and we loved Shock. We'd love those people. And on the night of the ARIA Awards, Chris Murphy, who passed away recently, and, you know, he's a very interesting figure, very, very smart guy, very savvy, but he kind of palmed us off to a different company on that night and chose that night to announce it.
That's weird.
And so we're at this table with people from Shock, and they were in tears and thinking that we were going to have this great year working together. So that night was odd. I remember meeting Chrissy Amphler for the first time that night, which was just the best. And then the next morning we had to get a very early flight to London because we were playing in Manchester that night.
Why is it always the next day after something like that, right?
Exactly.
Right. You know what? It's always the 4:30 lobby call you get after a night like
After a night like that.
You never get it after you play a gig to 200 people and the gig's done by 7 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? You go to bed at 10.
Matthew, you know the deal. And so we didn't get the chance to properly enjoy it. So, which has probably made us better people because we didn't think, oh, well, aren't we great? We made this record and it went to number one. We just went on working. We were playing toilets in the UK for a couple of months and Europe, that which was fine.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind European toilets. They're fine. Often you have to squat. You know, the porcelain is often shiny. The surfaces were often clean.
I've never experienced this, but being like the biggest band in Australia and going playing these shows overseas where it's kind of like not starting again, but, you know, it's definitely down a few tiers.
Yeah. We got very used to it. It's great playing in front of a lot of people, but you learn more about yourself when you play in Nantes in France or Columbus, Ohio. You really figure out what you like as people and if you're good friends because you've got to entertain each other. It happens in Australia as well, even now, and always has with You and I. There's never been a guarantee that we're going to do well. So if you play in South Coast, New South Wales, that will often play to 15 people or 20 people, and you've got to entertain those people. You can't ever get pouty. There's 15 people there, man.
Yeah, that's totally. They paid to see you.
They paid to see you.
And, you know, they could be 15 of the most diehard UMI fans in the world.
Well, 14 of those were on the door. We played a show, actually, and it was in Pomona, California. The day before, we played Lollapalooza Festival, which was great. Then we played this show in Pomona, and there were three people there, and those three people were all on the door. So when people say I played to two men and a dog, we've played to less than two men and a dog.
Tim Rogers, you and my co-hosting with me tonight. Up next, man, I want to touch on mental health in music and how you guys held up through the 90s. A busy time for you. It's Berlin Chair, Triple M Aussie. If I think what I'm saying, think what I'm saying, it's true.
Yeah.
What a song. Berlin Chair, You Are My Triple M Aussie. Tim Rogers, co-hosting with me tonight. Looking at how many albums you released during the 90s and your tour schedule, you must have done most of your writing on the road?
Did all my writing on the road because we were never home. We were used to that. It was just what you did. I, for a period of about 6 years, maybe, was home 20 nights a year.
Yeah.
Wherever, and you just get used to it. I think when my daughter was born, then that kind of put the brakes on that. I said, can't do this anymore. Mm. That's when we started writing quiet songs.
I always found like I used to get like, we'd be away for like a couple of months and we'd be home for a week. I'd be like, man, I just got to get out. Like, I'm going crazy being in one place.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gotten better at that. But were you like that when it kind of slowed down? Like,
oh, yeah. Stopping's difficult. 100 drug equations you could pull, but stopping is difficult. And it must be difficult to live with someone or to be romantic with someone or to be in love with someone who is like that. I've experienced it on the other side as well with performers who, when they stop a tour or a show or a season, and you've just got to be aware of that. And I guess that all we can do now is be aware of that in ourselves, that when you stop, it's you're going to be a bit cantankerous for a while, you know.
I think people are more aware now of mental health in music, and especially the importance of having a routine now. There wasn't much of an emphasis on that and how much that can kind of keep you sane.
It feels like that's only a recent thing. Maddie, that's a really good point. Speaking to and just watching younger acts and absolutely aware of it.
Yeah.
People eat quite well these days. And, maybe even when you started out, when we started, I mean, you go on tour, who cares? Get a chip. You know, and if there's whiskey with it, then everything's fine. There is an awareness of that, and I hope that for people's health and mental health and all that, that it's good. But playing rock and roll music or, playing hip-hop, we're out there, don't worry about keeping healthy. You know, I mean, keep mentally healthy and be good to people, but you're performers, man.
I feel like it takes a certain person to, take that plunge to become a full-time muso.
Do you become a musician or a performer because you're weird, or does being a musician or a performer make you weird? I think it's a confluence of both. To exacerbate that isn't bad, as long as you treat people well.
Yeah.
Always be good to hospitality staff, be a good person. But if you're a performer, there's got to be a screw loose, and that's okay.
Yeah.
When it topples over into anxiety or deep blue, you talk about it, look after yourself. You're a flipping weirdo if you feel that vocation, and you should be, and you shouldn't be made to feel any less of a human because of that. You know, you're weird because you make art, and you make art because you're weird.
Well said, man. Hanging out. Tim Rogers co-hosting tonight. Up next, want to hear what it was like. I've heard some stories going on tour with the Rolling Stones. 5 minutes. Triple M Aussie.
Hi, this is Mick Jagger.
Charlie Watts.
Ronnie Wood.
This is Keith Richards.
From the Stones.
From Triple M.
Upstairs for the ride.
It's the Stones, Honky Tonk Woman Live, Triple M Aussie. A break in the rules tonight because I got Tim Rogers from UMI co-hosting the full show with me. Tell me, man, what was it like going on tour supporting the Stones?
They were so sweet. Every big band we've ever played with, whether it's, you know, Oasis's or Soundgarden's or Stones or The Who, they were just sweethearts because they didn't need to prove anything. We presented ourselves as goofballs, which we are, and we were there to have fun, and we're massive fans. So I think they picked up on that and thought, whatever you want. Keith slinging his arm around your shoulder and going, yeah, man, you're my guy. You're the one doing the windmill. Yeah, you're the guy. Gallagher, or, you know, try and be a good person. And I think that those bigger acts pick up on that, that you're not sniffly and wanting more than you're given. We were just happy for the opportunity. Michael Jagger coming up to you and just, you know, having a giggle about some moves I'd stolen from him. And he was giving me a bit of a jibe about that. And
kept, what did, you know, he say?
Well, he just said, you know, stolen from the master. You know, we were kind of comparing dance moves. And then we talked about cricket because I know Mick's a big fan. And he was just so sweet.
Yeah.
And so funny and lovely. It's a really good lesson. You know, just you can almost promote goodness in other people if you just be a good person, you know. Grohl's like that. Grohl pretended that he remembered us playing with Nirvana in 91. This is how good a dude he is. When we played with the Foo Fighters a couple of years ago in Brisbane, he came bounding into our dressing room, cigarette and beer, and hey, guys! And he just got talking to me, and I said, well, you know, we went to this party together in 92 when you were out with Nirvana. And he went, oh, you're not that. And I was filling in the gaps because, of course, he can't remember. I mean, it was, you know, 1992, Jesus. And he went, oh, Salinas. And he pretended to know, which, I mean, he didn't need to do that.
Yeah.
What a lovely man.
Absolutely. Tim Rogers co-hosting with me tonight. What a song this is. Purple Sneakers, Triple M Aussie. Had a scratch only you could itch underneath the Glee Point Bridge. And now every boy in a knitted vest has got some precedent. So he took a personality pill and something red to swill. And now every fire has gone out and every heart that wanted to kill. Let's call it a day. You Am I, Triple M Aussie, Tim Rogers, a co-host in the full show with me tonight. Mate, before you go, it must be so great to have a new album out now when it looks like things are slowly getting back to normal.
We wanted to have it out last, mate, but thank God we've got a good bass player / manager who had the temerity to suggest that we just hold on.
Yeah.
It is. I wish things in the rest of the world and other countries were better. Mm. I find it very difficult to feel great about everything. However, I'm of the opinion that music and art doesn't always give you the answers, but it gets the questions in the right order.
Yeah.
And so, lamenting about the rest of the world, at least we can go out and try and bring this joy to whoever's in the room or whoever gets to hear the record. And it is a record of joy. And I think our band, for all our cantankerous, lugubrious, drunken lampooning, I think we are a band of joy.
We're so excited for this album, man. It's amazing. I've had it on repeat since I got it. And I'm so excited that you came in, decided to share these stories with us, man. And
I just come in for the bar fridge, Matty.
Yeah, well, that's afterwards. We can't tell people about that. I love you as a person, man. You're such a massive influence on so many musicians. When they talk about Tim Rogers, they say
what a big nose he has.
They speak from the heart and they say how amazing you are, and there's such a reason why you're so liked and respected is because you are like Mick Jagger to young musicians. You treat everyone with respect. That's why everyone loves you. We're excited for your new music, and I'm so glad that we got to do this. So
you're,
thanks so much.
A good man, Matty. I'm glad we're neighbors.
That makes two of us, man. If you missed any of this chat, you want to catch up on all of our interviews, just head to the Triple M Rock section on our brand new listener app, and I'll see you tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, Triple M Aussie.